Rygar, you and Rygar, the legendary warrior of Argul, must defeat the evil king and his army of dangerous beasts. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
And guys, today we are talking about Rygar.
Rygar.
It's almost like it sounds like a place, right?
It does.
I didn't realize
yeah,
that
it's a guy's
the
name.
Hero was Rygar. Yeah. I guess the place is Argul.
Yeah. I was thinking more like a Reptar sort of thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like the way the Rugrats pronounce Reptar. They're like, Rygar.
Joe,
I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure about that, but
they say Reptar or something.
You know, Reptar was on ice. Why wasn't Rygar?
That's true.
There should have been ice level.
I think there was ice. Wasn't there ice?
No ice.
No ice?
Oh, no, I meant like an actual musical.
Oh, like a musical.
Like a stage performance thing that we could see. But no, I don't even remember any ice.
Maybe there wasn't.
The
maybe I'm thinking of something else.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves here. We need to talk about Rygar, all right? We got to talk about what this game is.
So who is Rygar?
Rygar is, well...
Or what is Rygar?
Yeah, are you going to get philosophical with me here? Like, who is Rygar? Essentially, this is like...
Is Rygar a person, a concept?
Yeah, he's a person.
Okay.
And this is like, open world sounds silly here, but that is the idea, essentially.
Yeah,
it's like an open world RPG where you play as the main character, Rygar, and you kind of have to trek through the world of Argul and find the five items that the gods are demanding of you. And you have this like spinning disc. Think of it like a yo-yo. I think that's probably the best way to describe it to the viewers, because it always comes right back to you. It's actually pretty short.
The weapon on the chain gave me a little bit of a God of War feel.
Think of you as Kratos, except for now you're in the mystical world of Argul, and essentially there's this evil guy, if you can believe it, called Lygar.
Lygar with an L.
Yeah. And Lygar has, brought terror to the world, and now it's up to you to collect those five items that we mentioned earlier and, restore peace. So, Joe, how are you going to go about doing that?
So let me give you what I first thought this game was. When you first start this game, it looks like it's like just a 2D side-scroller.
I immediately got, Russian attack vibes.
Yeah?
Yeah. A bit.
Yeah.
Well, obviously not the weapon, but, just that style of game.
Yeah. And at first I was like, this seems okay. It was like the level was a little confusing at the very first level. But once you find the way out of that level, you're on an open world map.
And it's a completely unexpected.
Yeah, I had no idea the first time that I tried this. But then if you look in the manual, you can see the map and stuff. You actually have a pretty good indication of okay, I have to find this place first. And you go from each location on the map is its own usually side-scrolling level with its own enemies, its own boss and everything. So it really kind of feels like a bit of an adventure to find these items you need to eventually defeat
Lygar. There's definitely exploration in there. Sean, were you a fan of the exploration aspect?
I was a fan. This game, while it's a little generic in its fantasy setting, I would say, I'd say that it does a really good job of giving you a sense of place, because it really does feel like everywhere that you're going is sort of geographically a unit. So all the regular stages are side-scrolling, and then when you open up a certain door, you end up on in like a top-down, almost Zelda-like plane.
Yeah, and even the way that you move from screen to screen is very Zelda-like.
Yeah.
Yep.
Although I did notice that the screen scrolls with you for a while.
Yeah,
before
they're
you move
they're
to the
bigger
next screen.
They're bigger blocks, I guess. Yeah. I like the way that it sort of all feels like it's its own little world.
So if I can break the walls here for a second and just ask, in terms of your guys' exploration of this world, how did you go about finding things? Was it truly just poking through everything you could do? Did you look through the manual? Did you go online?
I used the map in the manual.
So okay.
The map in the manual, I used it a lot. But I will say that I liked the exploration enough that by the end of this game, it kind of felt like I didn't need the map anymore. I remembered where things were. The overworld map was built in a way where it felt like you remember it. Like, they felt like places I knew by the end of it, which I thought that was a really cool, you know. And it's also not a huge game, so there's only, you know, what, six
I
different
think, yeah.
like
well there's yeah there's
main
five
locations.
There's five dungeons, I think.
Okay.
Yep. Sean, how did you tackle the exploration part of it?
I started out just by dicking around, going in different directions, seeing what kind of dead ends I'd run into. And once I sort of felt like I'm getting nowhere like this, I did look into the manual and see that I was supposed to go to one place almost immediately. And so I went and did that and then sort of continued to blindly move forward. And I did make some progress that way. But I would say that it definitely has a lot of like features that you can use as landmarks. But I think by and large, the hub area is a little too samey everywhere for it to be like perfect for
yeah,
me to just learn it.
Yeah, if you don't see that map in the manual,
yeah.
if you don't see that, because that does give you like a pretty good scope of like where you are. But if you don't see that, you can get lost in here pretty fast.
Sure.
And also, there's no, without seeing that map in the manual, there's no indication that like maybe there's an island I should go to,
mm-hmm.
or maybe there are things on the edge of the coast. But I'll offer that I didn't look at anything before getting to the overworld, and I just kind of did the exploration, and I immediately was able to find the grappling hook, which was kind of interesting that, like, it was intuitive enough that the first item you required to get to continue on with the dungeons was the very first thing I was able to get.
That was, like, you just felt like you were supposed to go that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
On my first run, they're all sort of situated in a way, I guess, that you would find the grappling hook first. But I ended up almost getting up to the clouds before I even got the grappling hook.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Where they tell you about the city in the sky.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I went and I saw, like, you want to go there. And I was like, oh, no, I don't have anything yet.
Yeah.
Right, right. But that's right. really cool, because that's another, like, thing that they've placed in the game here, you know, level design, where they're like, okay, this is a good point to tell people, like, hey, just so you know, you should have collected a grappling hook by now.
Right.
And even though you can't do anything with it yet for that particular thing, it's just, like, a way to remind you of, like, hey, look for that grappling hook.
And that's the other part of what informed me on where to go. I would look in the manual to see where, you know, where the place with the grappling hook is, because somebody in the game told me I need the grappling hook to go any further. So I thought it was, granted, I did have to go back to the manual to find the map. I thought it did a good job of in-game giving you, like, your objective. Like, you have to talk to people, and you have to, well, those people, those bald guys.
Right, right.
The
same
people you
saw
everywhere.
They're called legendaries or something like that. Yeah. In the manual, it refers to them as, like, go to meet the legendary.
Right. But then some of them are called Endoras.
Yes, the Andoras give you the items.
Give you the items.
Yeah, they're the five. Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Basically, what we're talking about is you'll happen upon these doors, whether you're in one of the side-scrolling levels or in the overworld, like, top-down one, and and you'll be on, like, a pedestal. No, you'll be on this little platform, and you'll see this giant bald, not bald. Is it?
Yeah, he's bald.
They're bald.
He's got,
yeah.
Bald
and
bearded.
And buff.
And buff.
The three Bs.
Yeah.
The three Bs of being a god.
Yeah.
Just sitting on this pedestal, and then you'll get a nice little box of text saying either some obscure hint or saying, like, hey, why don't you rest here for a while?
Yeah, or my favorite, one of them says, if you see Durago, ask him to release my daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
He just, like, says that, and, like, he's telling everyone, like, hey, if you see Durago, tell him to release my daughter.
There's a few like that, though. There's another guy that's like, fight, fight, fight. I'm
oh,
like,
wow.
Is he just egging me on? Like, I didn't know what was happening, because usually, to Sean's point, they're inspired, you know? Like, they're trying to be, like, enlightened people who know this great riddle that they're asking you to solve. But I'll offer that, like, you know, the riddles aren't necessarily, like, that complicated, and most of the time it's more just, like, reminding, like, poking you about doing something.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you got that, you got that crossbow, right? Because otherwise you better leave this stage.
Yeah. Or it would be like, oh, you can get this item by going to the northwest. And I was like, what are they talking about? Until I found the overworld map, and I was like, oh, there's a north.
Right. Yeah, I think it's funny, actually, if you don't look at the manual and you don't know enough about this game and you just go into this game and you're on that side-scrolling level, I think we should just talk about that first, like your experience. At, what is it? It's like a mountain. It's called the Grand Mountain. Right. Not Grand.
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 Like, we're going to Grand's house.
Yes. Right. a thing I say every weekend. So you're on this mountain and, you know, it's just kind of, it's like a training wheels kind of thing. You learn a lot of things about the game this way, like annoying things, you know, enemies will respawn whenever, wherever, right. However
but,
they want.
But I think that that is necessary. I love that the enemies respawn.
But we'll save that.
We'll get into that.
We'll get into that. But I think, like, for me, I'm going to say why that's annoying, though, because first off, it's like there's not, you know, there's a thought to level design in certain games where, you know, the enemies are carefully placed throughout. And in this one, you know, enemies would appear right behind me. They would just spawn, like, immediately behind me. I'm okay with enemies spawning, like, into the area that you're currently in, or spawning in like places that would make sense, like a regeneration spot. If we talk about like Kid Icarus with those pots that the worm guys would fall out of, like that makes sense. These worms are always going to spawn out of there. These giant red scorpion things would just appear behind my back. I'd be like, how did I not?
Yeah, they
see
do
that?
Appear close. Well, but I do think that this game has a very quick, not that it's an excuse for it, but it has a very quick reaction time. Like you can turn and hit almost in a frame.
Yeah, they got very tight controls. Yeah. But like in terms of that, like what is our main like source of interacting with the world? It's just jumping and using your whirligig, right? So you only have that one weapon. And it's interesting because with a game, the main like calling card for this game, I think, is the fact that you have these power ups that are permanent, but they're mostly all just for like getting around.
The items are all exploration based. If you think about it, you have the grappling hook, which will allow you to climb up and down different areas.
Usually, an area or something is locked behind an item.
Yeah,
for the most part.
In some ways, that's like a Metroid element thing, you know, where
before
it's like
Metroid. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, both these things. Yeah, it's funny. We're talking about Zelda and Metroid, but this game comes before both of those. And, you know, so you have the grappling hook, which will help you get out of those situations. You have the crossbow, which doesn't work anything like how I thought it would work. I actually thought the crossbow was going to be a weapon.
Right. Because
one of the gods mentions it. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh, cool. So there is another weapon in this game. And then it's like, no, you'll actually just use that to create a zip line between two points.
You shoot a rope.
And I think that that's really a missed opportunity because, like, the basic, like, gameplay loop is pretty basic. I mean, I just said that, but you are really just using your armor yo-yo to hit things, and you get different ways to like unlock certain doors pretty much. And I think if they're going to have these power-ups, I would hope that there would be a new way to fight, like a crossbow or some more interesting melee weapon. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, that ties into the biggest thing about this game that we haven't talked about yet, which is the, you know, the progression system for your character.
Yeah.
There is, you know, a strength and defense. It's called Tone and Last.
Yeah.
And that's a stat that upgrades throughout the entirety of the game by killing enemies, different enemies. Some enemies will give you tone, some enemies will give you last. And you're powering up as a person, and the only way that you really see that progression is by doing, you know, by taking less hits on an enemy.
Right.
So
well, also
usually take four, could maybe be killed in one if you're strong enough.
Yeah.
Right. And as for the last, though, you can see that because you get more health.
Right. But
I didn't realize until after I played it that certain enemies give you tone and certain enemies give you last.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking when I was getting more health, I was like, I'm also getting more power.
Oh, interesting.
But I guess that's not the case.
It's not the case, but because I'm pretty sure that would have broke the game if you think about it. If you were just constantly leveling up both.
Yeah.
I mean, you
know, I just thought maybe it wasn't.
Not to say that this game isn't already a little broken. It's a little, I think it's got some jank to it.
There are things. Certain things. I think the biggest thing for me is that you can despawn enemies by walking away.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
But I don't think that was enough. The enemies are so frequent that it's to me, like, the levels were still relatively challenging, even with the ability to despawn the enemies.
Okay, but the despawn of the enemies, though, that comes from, like, that is a memory glitch. Like, that is, like,
yeah.
You know, I don't know how they would have avoided that since they wanted them to be, like, you know, planned encounters mm-hmm. in a game that's filled with random encounters mm-hmm. for those enemies that you can specifically, like, despawn. But essentially, it's like you're getting close enough to the edge where they're no longer seen
yeah.
that, like, if you went back any further than that, they would come back into that same place. But if you just manage to clip them off the edge,
right.
the way that the memory works on the NES is kind of like the very first, if we imagine them as like vertical frames, the very first vertical frame and the last vertical frame on your TV are kind of like the same memory. So it's knowing that, like, hey, there's nothing on this side, so there shouldn't be anything on that side.
Right. Yeah, it's like the game.
And that's a very basic explanation. Yeah. Like, that's not the truth, but that's the way that'll help us explain this.
I think a more layman's way is this game just lacks object permanence. Like,
right.
as soon as it exits the screen, it no longer exists.
Right. And even weirder about that, though, is that, like, that's what makes the random encounters necessary in the game, because you have to grind, you know, to get through these, you know, to level up and power up and be able to be strong enough to defeat the bosses. But the way that the random encounter in this game is handled is it becomes a little bit of a mess, and it's easily exploited.
Yeah.
Very easily
exploited. It's easy to grind, but I don't know. It didn't bother me too much the way that they spawned close to you. I felt like when they were spawning close to me, I kind of felt like it gave you the opportunity to feel kind of badass. You're like, because you have to move so fast. And yeah, I mean, you got hit sometimes too.
I'm not even talking about the problem with, like, I'm getting hit very often. And that is a problem because, you know, HP in this game isn't something that you necessarily have access to at any given time.
You mean, you know, like health power-ups or anything like that?
Yeah, or even just, yeah, like the ability to recover your health.
Yeah, recover.
It's,
okay.
It's only done through spells, which we'll cover in a minute. But other than that, you have to hope for a drop of a potion, which is only going to restore one health point.
Yeah.
So if you think about how long it takes you to get one of those, how many random encounters you'll experience, and how many enemies might get in the way to the point where you just don't have a way to get through all of them, you'll take the hit and be worse off because of it.
I feel like I had a different experience. I mean,
okay, let's hear it.
Yeah. I also think I did a lot more fighting. And we were talking about this just before we started recording, that I must have grinded a lot more at the beginning because it was taking me fewer hits to kill some things that I was watching you fight that was taking you more hits.
Right.
So I was probably already like a little more leveled up. So that might have made it easier, but I felt like the health potions were dropped enough to at least keep me consistent at a health level. Like, if suddenly I'm like, oh, I'm low at health, I would just stand in one spot where I knew some, like, basic, like, some nothing crazy, but like some basic enemies would show up, and I'd be able to hit them enough to get a few health potions back.
Okay.
But also, when you, I know we didn't cover this yet, but when you hit them enough, you get these other points. What are they called again? The point
star,
that you spend.
I call them stars or points, but I think they're stones is probably
right.
the right
you,
way
you
to go.
You get these stars that allow you to spend points on three different things. One of them is...
Well, they're your spells.
Right.
Those are spells that you specifically cast
right.
as Rygar.
And one of your spells is regain all of your health. And I would save all of my star points up for the health thing. So I would always in my back pocket have, like, restore all my health to kind of get me out of a sticky situation.
So what are the other spells?
There's Power Up, which is really weird because you cast it once and it's good for the entire game.
Oh, the entire
unless,
game.
The
unless
entire
you die.
Game, unless you
oh,
die.
Okay.
But, like, it's something that you would get back pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
It costs the least amount of points. I think it uses 3 points, and they're called Mind Points. That's what it is. It's the... You know, like
mind,
it says mind,
right, yeah.
and then you have like a meter. It only costs 3 points to cast this power up spell, and then you're immediately stronger. Your yo yo thing goes out faster.
I don't think it makes you stronger. I thought it just made your thing, your weapon longer.
It says here that allows the grapple. This is in the manual. Allows the grappling hook weapon to be stretched. So yeah,
right.
Wait,
okay,
it's a grappling hook.
It says grappling hook, but
interesting.
Yeah, that's why when I first read that, I was like, oh, I don't need that. I thought it was talking about the grappling hook.
Right, which can extend to infinity.
Yeah.
You have the world's longest grappling hook. And then you have attack and assail, which I actually thought at first, I was like, oh, this is kind of silly. But man, does it pay off in those boss fights because it's almost like a lightning strike for like 10 attacks. But it's only your very first 10 attacks. So you can't use it and then say, like, oh, I'm going to save this for later because you have to use it right away. But it attacks everything on the screen.
Every time you use your thing.
Every time, yeah. Every time you use the thing, regardless of if your weapon makes contact or not, it just destroys the you know the things on the screen.
Wow.
So, I think it's also useful if you're in a spot with particularly hard enemies that keep spawning.
Right, exactly. And you need to get out of a jam.
Yeah, you need to get moving. You can, but still, I felt more comfortable saving all those points
for
recover because then I could always get myself out of
I think,
jam.
Yeah, I think recover
it's
is money,
strategy.
Too.
Yeah.
Recover is good because you would save that until you're at your very end of your life because it's always going to restore all of your points. You know, something that isn't necessary when you only have 4 health points, but by the end of the game when you have 12, I could see some
use
in
some value
that.
To it, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So, Joe, this is a section I know you've been dying to talk about. In the manual, they refer to the enemies as...
They refer to them as, and instead of monsters or enemies,
bestiary.
They say this is our list of animalized men wriggling eerily.
So poetic.
It is. It's beautiful.
That's
in a
what
way.
We're fighting. We're fighting animalized men wriggling eerily. Well, I didn't think there was any eerie wriggling going
well,
on.
It really is a beautiful sentence.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't really think about it, but maybe these guys are like humans who have been transformed into those animals. I mean, Ligar has created like hell on Earth, and to be honest, this place doesn't look that bad.
I mean, I'm watching some footage right now, and I definitely just saw like a scary tree.
Yeah,
but like, I don't think that was a dude. I think that was just a tree.
But don't you think this is the world that Rygar has like just always lived in? Like, it doesn't look like there was ever a civilization here, period.
That is something I wanted to... Okay, so I'm sorry to get away from the monsters, but that is something that I wanted to address. Like, this is apparently like a kingdom or a place that used to have some civilization, and aside from the gates, like there's no buildings, there's nothing, there's no infrastructure except for some zip lines and some gates. There's no proof of human existence.
Hey, Ligar did all of this.
I'd have to. I just want to know, like, even what's Rygar's like backstory? Like, why is
he was dead?
Yeah, he was resurrected to fight Ligar, because you need a rhyming person to fight a bad guy.
It's one of those, the 5 legendaries rules.
Yeah. It needs the rhyme.
Yeah, that's the game story for you. Once there was a holy place called Ar-Ghul, which was founded by 5 legendary Endora gods, and then suddenly the blackest tragedy happened. That's... You know, it's the most dramatic manual I've read to date. But, yeah, I guess... my experience with this manual is strange because, like, I checked it out after you told me about animalized men wriggling eerily. I was like, I have to check this out. Then I found a bunch of cool tips that I would have never found out. And then I realized, like, if you don't have the internet, if it's 1987, like, you can't buy a used copy of this game. You need the manual to, like, do anything.
Don't lose the manual.
Well, you could have bought the NES
the Nintendo Player's Guide.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or you could have called that hotline.
Yeah,
Nintendo have a hotline.
Nintendo did have the Nintendo Power had a hotline, and even Toys R Us had a hotline. Actually, you could call in just to Toys R Us, and I guess they had someone who was just a resident expert of playing games. There another thing though with manuals, since we're on that topic, I don't know if it's going to happen in any NES games, but one thing that they used to do is like a form of DRM. Would be like in your manual, you know, it would have like a specific code for you, that like on those old DOS games, you know, and it would be like you have to type this into the computer, and that was like their serial key, if you will, but also to prove that you didn't like give it to your friend, you know, and you'd have to give them everything if you wanted to do it that way.
I guess like it's not the exact same thing, and I don't want to get too off topic, but the example for that I always think back to is for Metal Gear Solid 1, you have the character, I think it's Otacon, tells you no. It's the Colonel tells you to look at the back of the CD to get like the frequency for somebody you're supposed to call on your radio. And it only exists on the back of your box.
So thank goodness we have game FAQs and the like today to help us out there. But honestly, like things like that, interesting, right?
Yeah.
Because it is like a cool way to involve you directly into the story. But at the same time, you're like, you know, I don't want to take my CD out right now and look at that thing. Like, I don't need that. And it's like, sooner or later, all CDs and all physical media will just be gone anyway. Not because of an impending apocalypse that we keep talking about every episode.
No, it might just happen, though.
No, don't, I know, but also just like,
don't lie
to
our audience like that.
CDs are in retrograde. Just like Mercury. Everything's going to hell. Let's get back to the game.
But if there is an apocalypse, we have a vault full of cassette tapes for the next few episodes of Nostalgia that you can uncover.
Absolutely. I think that's a good
time. If some legendary warrior wants to uncover the NESTalgia backlog. Anyway, what's up, Mike?
I was going to say it's a good time for a break. You know, it's funny, we were talking earlier about the progression system, and I, you know, again, because I'm not checking this manual religiously, I didn't know about this, actually. I wasn't aware that I was getting stronger, because it doesn't necessarily like, feel like it.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know about this progression thing until I got to the first boss in the game, and I remember texting you, Joe, and being like, what do I do? Like, what's the secret? Because I knew you were into the game, and you probably got him further than that. And I was like, I just don't get it. Because I was doing like 100 hits the boss.
And the first boss is the one that just shoots up the three fireballs.
The three fireballs.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, if you don't grind,
and you have to grind a lot.
Because
even after that, I was like, oh, okay, grinding's the secret, apparently. Didn't know there was progression in this game, but sure, let's go with it. Grinding's the secret. I must have grinded for like 20 minutes, and it still wasn't enough to do like, you know, it still took like 60 shots to knock him out.
See, this was also before I realized that grinding was doing anything, but other than giving me health, and I knew my health was increasing, so I was, you know, I guess I was grinding on that first level just while I was playing, but not realizing that's what I was doing. But when I got to it, I was having a lot of trouble with it because there's not a lot of space to weave between those three fireballs that's shooting at you. But eventually, my strategy was just, I got enough points to have a recover available, and I just would jump in there. Take as many hits as I could while hitting him as many times as I possibly could. Once my health was low, recover, do it again, and not even on the second time, it just killed him.
Joe, we're playing two different games.
I
did that. I did that, and I even had our audio producer, Chris, watch me do it again today, and it still just wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for that. What's his name? Aruga, the first one? It just wasn't enough for Aruga.
Aruga. E-R-U-G-A.
I got words for Aruga, okay? Who is also just like another, like, generic two-headed dog thing. Like, that's a thing.
I thought he was more of like a turtle. Is he not a...
All right, turtle, sure, whatever. But, like, I see multiple heads on an animal, and I'm like, that's a dog.
About the enemy design and bosses, like, I think the enemy design in general is pretty good. Like, there's some cool variety in what you're going to be fighting. But the bosses are really underwhelming. Like, they don't...
That's what I thought, too. They were relatively easy.
They're not complicated. And aside from just the fact that if you're too weak, you have to brute force them, they're not scary.
Yeah, the only thing they've really done to the bosses is just add a ton of HP to them.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, some of the, like, who are those robots that show up?
Oh, yeah. Like,
the robots... Those,
I think it's just Mr. Robot.
...were my second least favorite.
Those robots that just show up, though, first off, that's random, and another, like... You know, I'm curious about the lore here. Like, you know, they're not going to give me anything, but
I'd
love to know.
I've never seen any technology in this game.
Yeah. Ligar actually comes from the future to go to the past, and then...
Well, I had assumed, though, because I called those robots in my notes, too, but I assumed that I was just seeing them as robots, and
they are
meant
robots.
To be something else. Are they robots?
If you look in the manual, in the Wriggling Beasts and Where to Find Them...
Wriggling Beasts and Where to Find Them.
They are called... There's something robotic.
Super Robot Bargain.
Oh, the bargain.
No. But it's like B-A-R-G-A-N. So it's like bargain. Like, or bargon. But no, it's not an O, so it can't be bargon. But bargain.
Bargain.
And it was designed for the purpose of having command of the Sky of Lapis and is capable of discharging deadly electromagnetic superwaves. I definitely felt those. I think he's harder than some of the bosses, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And also more interesting.
Yeah,
like it's
right.
like, oh, here's this crazy robot.
Different
and
mechanic.
Then it's like, and then you go to the boss, and it's like, oh, it's a spider.
Okay. Well, I also thought another enemy that was more at least more annoying than the bosses are those weird three-piece dragon things that, like, they fly
okay,
around.
Well, they're not
three-piece
dragon. Are they wearing a three-piece
suit? No, look
suit?
At them. There's three, like, they're almost like a caterpillar. They have, like, three sections of their body in, like, a staircase.
You mean the shoulders, the stomach, and the butt? That's
I
what
guess.
I'm seeing. I'm seeing,
but
like...
If, all right, listeners, look up a picture of them. You'll see what I mean. They're the shoulders, the stomach, and the butt are
what
very
are they,
separated.
All you've done to explain them are three-piece dragon. They can't look up three-piece
yeah.
dragon.
These guys
you
are...
Can look up, you can look up the manual.
Yeah, they're
you
called,
see the
they're called like Epocon.
Epocon.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you have to say it just like that because you too will be confused about how to pronounce things that have O and I right next to each other.
Oi.
Epoicon? Oh,
thank
okay,
you, listener.
There we go. Epoicon. it's a flying dragon which has been living in a primeval mountain. He will attack Rygar by dropping eggs of a snowgroose.
Didn't know there
was
snowgroose
eggs.
Didn't
know there was a living creature in those eggs.
Yeah, snowgrooses are
things,
off camera.
Those things, they're very big compared to like a lot of the enemies, and it doesn't seem to stop them from spawning like several of them on the screen.
Yeah.
It just takes up like half the screen. Very,
that's one of my random
difficult.
Encounter arguments, Joe, is that like you see like three of those guys spawn on the screen at different heights too, so you've got like the guy really low, and then the guy really high, so it's like, well, I can't jump or anything. And then the guy who's really low gets to a point where like, even if you duck, he's just going to drop that egg right on your head.
Right.
Like,
well,
good luck.
My strategy with M2 is take it slow. As soon as I see one, kill it immediately and don't go further and allow more to spawn.
This whole game is take it slow the game because you might as well just continue to let creatures respawn to kill them anyway. So there's no reason to rush through a stage
right.
because ultimately that's just going to leave you really frustrated with a boss.
Yeah, I feel like you guys are very negative on the grinding, which I get, but to me it was, I don't know, it was satisfying to kill a bunch of enemies. I didn't notice it as much.
Well, here's another thing about the grinding, and maybe there have been some games released on the PC during this time that it had that as a concept, but is this the first grinding game that, I mean, it's definitely the first grinding game that we've played.
I think it is.
Yeah, it's the first grinding game that we've played on the NES. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is like, I'm not saying that the grinding itself is bad.
Right.
I'm not saying that the progression is bad. It's a mix of my argument that the random encounters aren't handled properly and Sean's argument that like the basic line of combat isn't enough to keep your attention, you know? Grinding in Final Fantasy is interesting because you continue to, like, think about new ways to use your squad to, like, mm-hmm. you know, am I going to attack these guys with magic or, you know, my raw power, or am I going to use this sword instead of that wand? Like, you know, there's things to think about there, whereas here it's really just like, all right, I'm going to wait for the dragon to come to my
right.
level, and then I'm going to hit him twice, and then sooner or later
right.
I'll be able to hit him once.
One thing I do want to clarify for the listener that may not have played this game, because Random Encounter is more of a an RPG, like, turn-based battle sort of word, but he just means that instead of enemies that are clearly placed by the level designer, they just it's almost sort of kung fu style where they just sort of show up off screen and it doesn't matter if you killed them, there will be more.
Or
in the middle of your screen.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's almost like if the Goombas from Super Mario Brothers, because that's like, you know, that's the similar side-scrolling title. Or like, let's just say like Red Devils from Ghosts and Goblins, if they just showed up wherever,
yeah,
you know, instead
exactly.
of in those carefully
right.
placed spots.
Yeah, I mean, and they definitely come at a specific spot, that they always come at the same spot, but it's not...
It's not handcrafted.
Yeah, it's not fixed.
Yeah.
But it will always be like, when you come to this screen, you'll find two of these red devil looking things and one of these things, and then like they'll keep coming.
Yes.
But I guess now that I think about it, I noticed some variation in that, actually. In the first level, everything keeps coming. But in some levels, you kill something and then it's gone until you leave the screen.
Or you can kind of wiggle around in the screen to force things to. Like,
yeah.
you'll have to actually move the screen. It's like, you'll have to move enough in the
right.
level for the screen to shake a little bit.
Right.
But if the screen starts shaking, the new enemies will spawn.
Right. I guess I'm just thinking of some of like the vertical areas where the screen doesn't move.
You know, that's for me, that's combat. Mm-hmm. But how did we feel about controls in the game?
So I think that I think they're pretty tight in the side-scrolling levels. But when it comes to the top-down view, I just find it very strange that they like you can only move in four directions. You can go left, right, up, and down if you're just walking around. You have to jump if you want to do any sort of like diagonal movement. And I don't understand like if they allow you to move diagonally while you're jumping, why can't you do that while you're walking?
Yeah, I never thought of that, actually.
It's a very, it just feels sticky. Like, every time you land, you're just in, like, mud or something.
It's probably because they didn't, you know, like, they didn't have the animation.
Well, they don't have to. If you jump and you go diagonally.
No, and it looks silly. You look like you're just jumping forward, but moving diagonally. How would you look like you were walking forward but still moving diagonally? Is that how you
know, though? I think even as late as Chrono Trigger, I think if you move diagonally in Chrono Trigger, you don't turn diagonally. You're still facing.
I think it would work fine.
Don't quote me.
I don't think it would break my immersion. I just found it very annoying.
Exactly. With the limited things that are going on in this game anyway, I don't think it's going to break my immersion if he starts moving that way. That didn't bother me, though. I didn't mind hopping around because it's a good way to dodge everything.
No, it is.
You can be in the middle of jumping around. And, you know, projectiles can come at you, enemies can come at you, and as long as you're in the air, they can't affect you, but if you, you know, throw your weapon, it will still hit them.
Yeah.
One of my bigger complaints. I did exploit it a little bit, but the game doesn't understand its own depth.
Yeah.
When you're on an overworld map, when you're a top-down view, you can jump and, like, for the perspective, you're going higher up on the screen, but the game assumes that you're still on the same X-Y axis. I'm jumping up and I'm hitting an enemy that's behind me because the game thinks I'm back there because I jumped.
Reminds me of when we were talking about 1942 and how like every plane is on the same exact part of the Z-axis.
Until you loop de loop.
Okay. So I felt pretty good about the controls. I mean, I'll agree with you there, Joe, that like it is a tight attack and like there I didn't feel like it wasn't responsive, like, oh, it just didn't get out quick enough or oh, I couldn't turn fast enough. Like I think those things are appropriately animated and
I think that it has some good game feel when because it does incorporate a stun and a little bit of knockback on your enemy, like it does feel punchy. When you do hit them, you do feel like it wasn't just, oh, it registered a hit. It was actually like, oh, I definitely got this guy.
And I'll also applaud them for, like, the unique way that they handled, like, all those additional items without having to, like, go to a menu and select them. It's just, like, you know, find the part where it's needed and then, you know, like...
Contextual.
Like, hit the up arrow and your attack button and because you're near this spot, now it'll form a zip line. Or hit down and your attack button and if there is ground below you, it will know to use the grappling hook to go lower. Thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
The items... In general, though, I'm echoing the statement from earlier, but I do wish that they would have been able to be used in a combat situation as well.
Exactly.
Right.
Because even the grappling hook, you know, like, think about how cool that would be if all of a sudden you're able to, like, grapple enemies, bring them towards you, and then hit them with the whip.
The whip from Castlevania. The yo-yo. Because of the way that the grappling hook works in the game, there's no reason why it couldn't have been registered as a weapon if you hit somebody above you, because it does like look like a projectile that you're shooting.
Yeah, it won't even grab those mind stones or potions or anything. Yeah. It won't grab anything that isn't you know, like other than a piece of land.
Yeah, missed opportunities.
Yeah, and so now that since we're talking about items and the exploration again anyway, let's talk about backtracking. It's weird. At first, this was like a problem for me. Then I was like, well, it's not really that big of a deal. Like, how else would you handle it?
The levels aren't huge. So when you have to, because first, you do have to backtrack a little bit on the overworld map. But you also have to go back into full levels that you've been to now that you have the grappling hook, or now that you have, you know, whatever, the crossbow.
And I think I'm a bigger fan of backtracking in the levels, because that's like a cool, like neat way to go back to those levels that you've already been in. Like, imagine if you had to go back to World 1-2 in Super Mario Brothers because you just got this new thing and you got to do it there. You know, that's cool. I don't think backtracking in the overworld was necessary, and I almost kind of wish, like, after you beat the boss, you just started back at, like, you know, outside the Grand Mountain.
I don't know. I sort of like it establishes a sense of place.
Yeah.
If backtracking is sort of like a new concept right now, and I don't know. I think that it's needed to give you the visual memory of where you are and where you've been.
Right. And also the feel, if you're going to backtrack to those levels, then the feeling of going back on the map to get physically to where that level is kind of puts the cherry on it. You know, it makes it feel complete. Yeah. Like, really backtracking fully.
You got that anticipation.
But yeah, it was also just cool to me that, I mean, I guess that is like a Metroid thing, but you unlock an item and you go back and you're like, oh, wait, wasn't there a, you know, there was a post here that I could shoot a grappling hook or a whatever. A grappling
line. Yeah, and you can imagine
if you're
into the game enough, you could have your notebook and be taking notes on, like, oh, cool, this guy told me I need the crossbow for here, so I'll make a note of that.
Right.
And then this way I can check it later.
Yeah,
and be
yeah.
like, oh, yeah, now I got the crossbow. Let me go back and see what was there. You know, I think the game could have even went further with this idea, and even just, like, cool, like, secret areas or, you know, like, new ways to get to different parts of the overworld. Like,
right.
like, you know, imagine if there was like a cave that connected the east and west sides.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah. Like,
you know,
passageways and things like that.
But you could only access it after a certain point in the game.
And,
like,
and
that would have been neat.
Now that you're saying that, too, I think that is one thing that, granted, it's the first game to do stuff like this that I know of or that we've played.
Yeah, it's definitely
sure
been
others,
done
but...
at this point. I want to stress that. And like Legend of Zelda has come out in Japan.
Right.
But like you know, for the North American player, this is the first time you're experiencing something.
But
like
I do think it could have benefited from more of that stuff on the world map, to more than just your destinations on the map.
Like, yeah, I mean, right now this whole gathering items that give you access to things that you couldn't before—they're acting as just keys. Like, they may as well have just said, "Here's the blue key; you can use it on blue doors."
Sure.
And,
but it is more fun to see, like,
yeah,
oh,
I
this
mean,
is
can,
I'm creating it, a grappling
exactly.
line.
Exactly. In the context of the game, it feels better. But I think that if they're gonna introduce a new feature, it better have more than one use. Like, that's just inefficient game design to me.
Yeah, but most of them have. I mean, you do the same thing with it, but they most of them have several times. Like the grappling hook, you use that several different places.
The grappling hook, I think, is the best example. But I think the worst example is just like the crossbow. Like, you will see just these lone yellow like blocks that, like, oh, I guess I'm using the grappling hook.
I thought they were like wooden stumps.
Yeah,
whatever, wooden stump.
I know.
And, yeah, but like, it's not like, oh, I can use my crossbow to trigger this other thing that has a completely different context in the game.
I understand what you're saying. I totally agree.
I do like that they have implementation both in the overworld and in the levels themselves for the most part.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't change the fact that, like, you know, even though these are missed opportunities, and I get it, Joe, you're saying this. Well, this is the first time, right? There's still problems, right?
Yeah,
can you agree on that?
But there are definitely problems. Yeah.
No, I'm saying that's still a problem, even if it's the first
crossbow,
time.
I'm surprised that you said crossbow was the worst, because I thought that was also very – it was cool to like be in a level and be like, what is this wooden stump? And then later on be like, oh, where was that wooden – like, I go back and do – like, I still see that in game design today. Like, just like there's things – that you don't know what it is, and then later on you realize, oh, this unlocks these, and you go back to those levels to find those things.
I mean, like, between the, what do you call it, when there's already a zipline, the item that you get so you can
use. Oh, yeah. I actually don't know what
whatever
called,
that is,
but...
and the crossbow are almost, like, redundant. Like, you could have just had that be one item that you created your own for the whole thing. And
sure.
I mean, it felt like they were... Like
they're stretching it.
It is weird that like one acts as a zip line and the other one's like, now create your own lines, and it's like, but only in these specific spots that look exactly like the zip line one. All right, so that was backtracking somehow. We didn't even know the given items thing. Let's talk level variety.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought there was a decent amount of variety between the levels for the most part. You would get like different enemies and stuff like that. But then there was one point where suddenly one of the levels is an overhead. You it's like the overworld
map.
You're in a dungeon. And it's I think it's cool that they had that level variety. I don't know if the two overworld levels were executed as well as the side-scrolling levels, but I just thought it was interesting that it was kind of nice to break it up. But there was a lot of, especially in the first level, which was
the game works better as a side-scrolling.
It does,
game. Yeah,
I think it
absolutely.
Durago is the name of the place.
Oh, that, the island.
Yes,
that you have to get to.
Yeah,
yes.
It's like the northwest there.
Yes,
that there was a lot of like you're on this like stone cobblestone floor, and there's just a lot of like repeating. Empty. There's nothing in the space. Like every screen is just like more floor.
Yeah.
And like that was a little. It was like felt a little scarce. Like they were trying to make it vast, but they didn't have quite enough in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was cool to change it up. But that was another boss battle that was also overhead. You could kind of exploit the whole depth perception thing to beat the boss. You kind of stay below it. You jump up, hit it a bunch of times.
Right. I would even disagree, though, that there's a good enough level variety in the side-scrolling stages. They were all, like, fun enough for me, but there was, like, some moments of deja vu with just, like, different background assets. It's like, well, the structure of the stage is still very
right.
much the same.
Yeah.
Go left to right, just head right and get to your thing and, you know, dodge or attack the enemies as you choose.
Right.
The level that stood out for me was the cave level.
Yeah, same.
I think that the cave level is really cool because it's actually got, like, some dungeon design to it where you have to choose your paths, check out
It's got more verticality to it.
Right. Yeah. See what the legendaries
have to say. There was another level that you use primarily the grapple hook. Like, you go...
Yeah, in the forest, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there was another one.
Well, you use them in all the stages,
right.
But I'm talking about
there's
in the
one
forest.
One where you're, like, climbing a mountain, basically, with the grapple hook.
Right. To go to the Sky City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool, and you're right, like they don't get too different from each other, but I think another reason why it didn't bother me too much is the game is relatively short. It never for me felt like, oh, this is getting old. It's only five levels.
I mean, it's short when you have the resources that we have, but I think it's much longer for people that only have like the manual to go off of.
But that's all that I went off of. Yeah. I think everything you need is in the manual. It tells you exactly where to get the things, and there's a map of where it tells you where each item is.
I never struggled with like what to do next.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is this might go as like one of those games that I've booted up the most in nostalgia. Like I've just continued to like be like, okay, I finished that. I'm gonna take a break now, and then like, oh, but I gotta go back in now, and or I'm stuck on a boss, and then. Okay, but I just want to try that thing one more time. Something about this game kept intriguing me to go back to it. Like I didn't know what the payoff was gonna be, and to be honest, the ending's not that great. But like I didn't know what was gonna happen, but I was just like intrigued by this whole world.
Yeah,
and it's like a weird thing that like I was able to play it in like 5-minute doses. But this isn't one of those games that you should be doing that in.
No,
I agree with Joe. It's short. It is a short game, all things considered. It's also a relatively easy game, all things considered.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say this is an NES hard style game. I think most people could play this.
The core gameplay mechanic is pretty easy. Like none of the enemies pose that much challenge. But I just think that this game is really hard to do in one or two sittings. And the fact that you cannot save in this game, and there's no password feature in this game. Like kids in the 80s, I mean, there are ways to save now between like if you've got like a Retron or if you've got all that like if you're emulating or all these things, like you can save your progress, but you need to keep the system on if you want to make any kind of progress in this game.
Right.
And I just think that is a huge oversight. I know that you guys are saying that this is short and easy, but it's still. Take some time for like a new player, I think, to get accustomed to.
Right, and I think, but I also think that's part of the journey. You know, like this is weird, but like I didn't mind replaying the beginning a few times. Like, and I did. Yeah. Like when I got far enough, I was like, okay, I'm far enough now that I just want to see this thing through. But I've played like up to getting the grappling hook, like, a lot. Like, there's just something about, like, the fun of, like, starting in the mountain, exploring the mountain, getting to the overworld, and then acquiring the grappling hook and being like, oh, it's such a neat thing about, like, and I think it's just, like, me neat. I don't think it's, like, an actual, like, great game. I just think, like, that, you know, like, it's so cool for me to be seeing this as someone who's playing them in chronological order. It's just like, huh. This mechanic is everywhere now, but this is where the trend is going, and it's like the first one that we've seen.
Yeah.
I just also think though, Sean, like I'm not saying it's so short that you could beat it like in 15 minutes, but it should not take anyone
who
wants.
You can beat it in a
couple hours. Yeah, I was gonna say anybody who wants to beat the game should be, even with like dying and starting back up again, because you only go to the very same screen that you're in. That's including boss fights. Like, if you die at the boss fight, you just go right back into the boss room.
That was nice, because some of the bosses, it took a few tries, and if I had to play the whole level again,
you would have probably backed out.
Yeah.
But it's a long enough game. They understand that there's not a save feature to it. And we're talking maybe, like, at most, 4 hours? Like tops.
That's what I would say too.
If you really know this game, like after a while, I think you can get all the way up to the ending in like 45 minutes.
I mean, I did watch a speed run that happened. It was like less than half an hour. But I mean, I get it. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Did either of you get to the final boss?
No.
The Ligar.
Ligar, yes. Is it Ligar?
Ligar, and he's green, and he has like two, what are those things coming out of him?
They're like, I got it written down here.
You know, mouth things.
I think they're like
snakes. I thought it was like a lion with snake heads.
Yes, I thought
like
that's what
me.
It was.
Was it a chimera?
Is that what a chimera is?
I don't know.
No, but also like,
Animalized man wriggling ear.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I was going to say, to be clear, he's an animalized man, but also the snakes aren't like as predominant as the Ligar himself. They're just like these.
Is he a lion tiger?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Well, that's actually what I immediately went to, and then I was like, oh yeah, but that wasn't a thing in 1987. Like,
was it not?
It's just weird that, no, the first Ligar was created like when like 2000 something. Like,
are we talking about like Napoleon Dynamite right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's in Napoleon Dynamite.
There was a real, I thought they made a Ligar. In real life, I could have sworn.
Hey, maybe.
I could have sworn.
It doesn't sound unbelievable to me. Yeah.
See, thank you. They are real. Thank you, Chris. See, that's why we have our audio producer.
Yes, for that reason.
Just for the, because he's a Ligar expert. I forgot that he works at the zoo and is our Ligar expert. So, Sean, do you want to take back laughing at me now
to
my face?
I still think it's funny.
Okay.
Anyway, can
talk
I
talk to me about the final
talk
boss.
About the final level in general.
Okay, yeah.
Because first of all, you climb up to this final level, which is like this castle in the sky.
Something that is teased at the very beginning of the game, like when you first get to that stage, enough of the legendaries will kind of like poke you to be like, hey, you check out what's up there. And then when you finally get up there, they're like, oh, but you need these five things before you should even think about going up there.
They got a nice view from the roof.
But when you get up there to it, it is, I liked it. Now looking back on it, maybe it's kind of a flaw, but you're kind of just like in this huge castle wall. It's like 7 or 8 screens long, and there's no door on that side. You get to the corner, and you got to go up 7 or 8 more screens. But I kind of thought it was cool at the time. I was like, oh my God, this is so vast.
Right. If only, I guess like my response to that is, if only it was as vast as they made it seem. Really cool if you want to do something like that, but then to have it actually not be that like crazy long of a level that like is intricate was like,
yeah, you go through
strange.
It's like it's just a bunch of very similar looking square rooms with a bunch of shadows. The monsters are all
shadows. They're all shadow monsters, which isn't explained in the manual as far as I know, but like, sure.
But
in
you
the
know.
Clouds, everybody is shadow.
Right.
Yes.
But they do
the
after
hedgehog.
A while kind of, they take their toll on you. So when I got to the boss, I only had my 3 health, and when you die, you always respawn with your 3 health, even if you have room for more health. So I left and went, got my health back up, got enough points to have a recover stored away, and at a certain point, once you get the coat of arms, there are certain of the bald
the
men.
Legendaries. Yeah, there are certain guys that will just give you a life potion that's different than those little red potions that drop in the
this
enemies.
Life potion you can use whenever you want, and it gives you all of your health back. But also, when you talk to those guys, they give you the potion and give you all of your health back. So I stocked up on that potion, on that recover, went back in, tried to keep my health as long as I can.
And you can have 2 of those potions.
You cannot.
You can't.
The other spaces does not let you take a potion. I tried.
Oh, interesting.
It only lets you take, what is the last item you need?
The ocarina.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The ocarina. Huh. It only lets you
Why
it
a flute or something. That? It's what you need to do to open the door to the Shadow Realm.
Okay.
Because I thought you could get two of those, but you can't. But you can exploit it completely. You can go in there as many times as you want, as long as you have room for a potion, get your health fully healed, and get a potion. But I went back up to the main level, tried not to fight that much because I didn't want to lose any health, got back to the boss, and was like, okay, this is it. I'm going to just go in and attack, lose all my health, recover, attack, lose all my health, recover, attack. But I only had to attack and lose all my health once, and then on the second time, he died. So, wasn't that hard.
So that's just, that's the story of this game. Yeah. I just kept hitting him, and then he just died.
The level was harder than the boss.
The theme of the game is hit everything in life, and and you'll just get what you want.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and then, Joe, how did you feel about the ending? It's just like a... I don't know what I'm expecting, really, I guess. But, from some games, smaller-sized games, when you get an ending, it's just like, congratulations, you did it at the end, right? And it's I guess, for Rygar, I was expecting, a more conclusive thing. Yeah. But they really just kind of send you off with, a story of, peace is now returned. You've done it.
Also, you get that really nice picture.
It's just one screen, right?
Of the dove.
Yeah, the dove, yeah. Who is the dove?
It's just a dove.
I thought maybe that was Rygar now.
Okay, you opened... Okay, but you know what you did? You opened the peace door. The peace door was removed when Rygar came into office. So, when you create the peace door again, that is it's all about the... What you guys just don't understand is this game is talking in metaphor, and the peace door stands for peace in the world.
That's
beautiful.
Yeah, I think I did understand that. Okay, you know what? I take it back. The ending's great. The ending's a masterpiece, and I really wish that they would just make a Rygar film.
To be honest, this might say something about the ending, but when you asked me that, I couldn't quite remember how it ended.
You didn't remember the dove?
I don't remember the dove now, but I do remember that it's just one, it's like a title screen, and it doesn't go away. It's a screen that says... whatever, peace has returned, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But then I'm sitting there waiting, I'm pressing A, I'm pressing start. I guess you just have to restart.
You have to hit the reset
system,
button, that's normal,
I was hoping for a new game plus.
Don't you remember? could you imagine how awesome that would be if you just kept all your stats and you get to do the whole game again?
You just go to the end again.
You just wreck everything. Speaking of, wrecking everything, the game...
Wreck-It Ralph 2 is coming out soon, right?
why did we both think that?
Is that because 20 episodes ago, I was like, Wreck-It Ralph 2 was bad, and you guys were like, it didn't even come out, and I was like, it feels like it did.
Yes.
I think it is coming out right around the time of this episode. Anyway.
Brought to you by Wreck-It Ralph.
No, definitely not. I was going to talk about the progression thing. It lets you go all the way up to 4,086, which is just ridiculous. But I do wonder, if you have 4,086, the Lygar isn't a one-hit kill probably, right? It's probably still a couple hits.
I don't know.
I think that would be funny if it actually was 4,086 is the max, not because of some integer flow thing, but because that is the max anybody could possibly get because it will kill the Lygar in one hit. I just like that idea.
Yeah.
But probably not the case. All right, and that's Rygar.
Yeah.
It was developed and published by Tecmo. They just did our last game, Mighty Bomb Jack.
Yeah, they've...
So
quite a track record.
It's just a weird track record. You remember Jack, right?
I know Jack, yeah.
You remember Bomb Jack? Yeah, that was the back of the box.
Oh, yeah.
You remember Jack, your friend from the arcade? He needs your help here. And they're going to go on to do Solomon's Key, which is a game we'll get to in, I think, 2 weeks' time.
Oh, fun.
So I know that Solomon's Key is pretty well-received. Rygar is only a game I found out about recently before recording. I think Benj Edwards, who runs Vintage Computing, he was like, Rygar was the only game I had for the NES, and I thought it was awesome. And I was like, Benj Edwards, that would happen. Sure.
If it's the only game you have.
And I'm like, but I am impressed. Let me say that. Rygar is impressive, given when you play these games in chronological order. to determine if it's impressive when you go back and play it today, we'll figure out in a minute. But first, I want to ask, are there any stray thoughts that we want to cover before we go into our essential games list?
I guess I could say the music was nice for the most part. There was one track, I think it was in that Durago, that top-down dungeon, that was, I think it was actually just four notes.
Right.
Over and over and over again, and the most repetitive dungeon in the game. So I liked the music.
I think it's funny that you guys like the music, because let me say this. Every time I entered a new stage, I was like, oh, this music is pleasant, you know? Like, wow, look at this. But on every single stage, I would turn my volume back on to hear it, and then I would immediately mute it again. Because even if it's nice, the loop is too frequent, and it's to the point where everything is just a melody, so you just continue to hear that, and then you get stuck in your head, and then you're on a run, and you hear it in your run, and you have to get out.
I guess I should say there were standout songs. Like not every song was great. Like that first song is like just a lullaby.
Wait, are you talking about the song with the sun from The Lion King in the background?
Don't diss the sun from The Lion King. That was a pretty cool backdrop.
It's a good sun, yeah.
Yeah, I think that is a great sun.
Okay,
don't get me wrong.
I don't mean that as the first song. Right away, you start out on that screen, and like 2 seconds later, you're on another screen.
Yeah, top five suns in the NES.
But that main, what is it, Grand Mountain song is a lullaby.
Yeah,
and I didn't care
exactly.
For it.
Not only it actually... It feels like one of those songs that you would hear, like, first thing you wake up, like, in the morning. First thing you wake up in the morning, and that's, like, the anthem
of
the town.
Of
it's time to go to communist work or something. And like,
what?
I don't know. This song is just giving me some weird vibes. Like, I didn't like it.
All right. Well, on that note, I guess we should move on to the essential games list.
Okay. All right, it's time for the essential games list. And you know, something I noticed just while editing some episodes recently is that I say, okay, it's time for the essential games list. The shortest song in the world plays, and then I'm like, all right, it's time for this. Like, you know, it's like people are expecting probably a break, a chance to pause, and it's like immediately we go right into it. So I'm sorry. This is probably the last time I do that, but I thought it was worth acknowledging. This way, when I don't do it in the next episode, you'll understand why. But, Sean, explain to me, what is the essential games list?
Okay, so here's the thing, man. All right, so we played all these games, and you want to play some games. We don't want to play all of them. You want to just play, like, the highlights. You want the greatest hits collection. You want, now this is what I call NES games 4. This is, we're going to tell you what games are on that CD.
Great. Yeah. I think
the exact explanation that.
I think you tripped yourself up once you went for volume 4.
Yeah, that's what I was confused too.
I mean, you know, there are only a few tracks. You're right. This is the first volume of Now That's What I Call NES Games.
Right. Okay. So with that in mind, let's look at it in our. Everybody put on your 2018 goggles.
Yes.
Okay. Joe is looking very alert.
Those are my goggles.
Good,
those
good.
Are my open
so
eye goggles.
Joe, take me through your essential games list vote.
All right. I got a little bit of a story here.
Love it.
But when I first started playing this, I remember thinking, wow, if we hadn't just played Kid Icarus, I might have voted this essential. Like this is like when I first discovered the overworld, which is pretty early. Because I'm a sucker for exploration, I'm a sucker for like the feeling of adventure and a story. But then I kind of played a little more, and I really, really liked this game. I agree with most of the things that you guys complain about, and I have some of those complaints myself. But for me, it was short enough that the lack of variety didn't bother me. It just felt like I was on a little adventure, and that's the kind of thing that that I'm always looking for. And also the fact that you have character progression, and you have these power-ups, and you have a sense of the world that you're in, and by the end of the game, I kind of felt like I knew where I was in the world. This sounds very like I discovered myself while playing this
game. I'm waiting
Please
for that.
Please go on, yeah.
And the variety. I mean, I know it wasn't crazy variety, but there was enough variety to just keep me entertained. And this is the first game in a while that I've beaten in general. First of all, for nostalgia, and also that I beat because I was just having that much fun. So I got to vote this essential.
All right.
I really liked this game, and I see the flaws, but I think I still, even with the flaws, I'd still go back and play it. Regardless of this podcast, I would just play it because it's fun.
Love it. It seems like Joe really enjoyed his time with Rygar. Maybe playing as Rygar. Maybe you'd like to meet Rygar one day.
If that could be arranged.
With that in mind, Sean, would you, you know, I'm not going to hint at what I think your vote is, but would you like to wake Joe up?
All right. So I'm gonna use an analogy here. I think that Rygar it's like an orchestra. It's got all these different, it's got the brass and the woodwinds, and it's got all these different, different sections of this song that they're going to make. And all those sections are like the open world. It's got pretty nice graphics. It's got, it's got, character development, not character development. It's got character progression. It's got different modes of play, whether it's the side scroller or the top down view. But it's then this orchestra plays Hot Cross Buns, and that's all that it's doing, because the core gameplay mechanic is just to hit. And it's not even like, oh, but when should I hit? It's just hit always, because there's no strategy. There really isn't too much strategy going on with any of the enemies, except for maybe the first couple bosses where it's like, okay, jump after the fireball and then hit. I just think it's too basic of a game when you actually just look at the moment-to-moment gameplay to say that, like, and I do respect all of the cool features that they have in this, like the open world and everything I just stated, and a lot of the proto-RPG elements that it sort of introduced to us. I just think that it has way too many technical and design flaws for this to be on the essential games list.
That's fair. My only defense to the strategy thing, and I totally get that, but my only thought about that was, for me, I didn't feel like... I love strategy, like, in games, but I didn't feel like this was trying to be a strategy game.
I'm not saying that.
Get your... I know what you're saying, but...
All games are strategy games if they have... Like, it's not a strategy game, man. By that logic, any game that you have to think about any sort of action that you're going to do is a strategy game. I just think that...
Sure.
That it has little depth.
It was okay. So yeah, it was too easy to just kill everything the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I guess
like, you know, much later game. But since we're in the essential games list mode now, we can compare
right.
them. Is if you're looking at something like Secret of Mana, right, which is an action RPG, right? It's a game that, you know, even though it's like more top down than side scrolly, the way that you attack enemies, right, even though it is just kind of like, oh, I just slash the enemies, I do whatever I want, right? It's like, well, you know, the bosses and stuff are like, they're designed differently enough from each other that every time you go into a fight, it's not just like, how do I figure out how to slash my sword into this thing as many times as possible? It's like you have to figure out the pattern of the boss and like what makes the, you know, like what makes this encounter different and why I shouldn't just go in there guns blazing. Because I yes. felt like I could certainly go into every level just being hot-headed Rygar who's just ready to take down
right.
everything.
Okay. And yeah, and after the that explanation too, I guess I agree with that too, that it is like very simple, and I guess for me I just had enough that satisfied me that I didn't mind.
Joe, I don't want you to. Yeah, I don't want you to. You know, to change your thoughts.
Oh, I think, trust me.
Yeah,
I still 100%. This was essential
yeah.
to me.
I really like how much you enjoyed this game.
I still say play it. It's not essential.
For me, there is no denying that this game is an experience and one that I chose to play through like a couple times. Like, I only finished it once, but I really wanted to like continue to just go back to it. Not because I even felt like I was missing something, but just because I didn't want to miss something. I kept going back and saying like, oh, maybe there was a different way to handle this or a different way to do that. And sure, there wasn't. You know, like, we're not at that stage yet in game design where we're going to see stuff like that. But for everything that this game has to offer at that point in time is just really interesting, and I think is like a point to trace to that I would totally recommend, like, the party's interested. Like, if you've heard anything about this progression, this pre-Zelda, pre-Metroid, Zelda-like progression system with Metroid-like tools for exploration, if that's intriguing you at all, you gotta check out this game because, like, I certainly got good vibes playing this game. The reason why it's not going on the essential games list for me is because everything that makes this game cool is also done better in other games and isn't nearly as incomplete as this game is. There's a lot more that this game can do that it didn't do, and it's probably because of a limitation at the time and also just because it hadn't been done yet, you know? Like, there wasn't, like, that idea. But I don't think that that's a reason for an excuse on the essential games list. So for me, This game was a ton of fun to play, and I really enjoyed it. But at the end of the day, can I really say you must play Rygar? Yeah, I think, like, and for me, too, this game, I might have enjoyed this game more than a few games I put on the essential games list, but I think that makes me think more about should those games be on the essential games list more than this game should be on because I enjoyed it more than those games.
Will there be an essential games list purge?
I think it's coming. I think it's coming. Get ready for the reckoning.
Well, especially, I mean, I feel like we have a lot of great games this year that are all going to be coming all at once.
Yeah,
so, like,
yeah, they just keep coming, too. Speaking of great games, next week we are playing Section Z. I'll let whoever's, you know, played that game of our listeners decide whether they think that's a great game or not. We'll let you know next week. If you can't wait for next week, I'll tell you good news, okay? www.nostalgiacast.com has access to the other 49 episodes plus the special.
Yes.
Yeah, don't think that the 49th episode was actually the 50th because, no, I number the specials differently. Okay? Open up your app, whatever you're playing this podcast on, and look at the title of this episode. It is 050. And the reason is for that first zero isn't for some cool art aesthetic. It's because we are going to hit up to 700 of these bad boys. And if you want to invest in that ride, if you're like, I'm ready to invest, I'm going to say, whoa, pull back the wallet and pull in the interest. We want your interest, baby.
If you want to invest,
we collect interest on what you pay us.
Well, I meant the attention. Interest and attention.
If you can reach me with the investment.
Yeah, if you could send a separate email to Sean, but if you wanted to email us, that would be contact@nostalgiacast.com. Not nostalgia. We're talking about nostalgia, and of course you know to spell that because you love the NES. That's the whole reason you're listening to this, right? You know, because Nintendo does what Nintendo does. I'm Michael Esposito. You can find me on Esposito Film on Twitter. Can't wait for another 50 episodes with these guys. Let's do it. Section Z coming your way. It's a shmup if you didn't know. Have fun. Bye. Now it's time for the post show.
What's
going on, everybody? Welcome to the 50th.
We're doing a post show. We're not doing.
Welcome to the 50th episode post show.
Joe and I were going to do a.
Oh,
can you leave?
I don't think so. I see. I know about mics without mics.
Who?
Contrary to popular belief, not only would I have known about it because it's already aired. Okay.
Wait, really?
It's in one of the episodes. I forget which one. But the reason why I know it's in one of those episodes is because I edit the episode, Sean.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah,
true.
I put it in there myself.
Sam edits all these episodes.
Sam edits them.
Sam's in a dungeon right now, okay? Like, when's the last time you heard from Sam?
I think he
hired the vacuum cleaner guy from Breaking Bad to move him to Vermont. Okay. Speaking of, since we're in the post show, I've been watching Better Call Saul.
So have I.
Back from the beginning.
Underrated show.
Back from the beginning.
Don't shush me. Okay? When I'm trying to talk to you about Better Call Saul.
Yeah, no, I had to shush you just because I was very nervous that you were about to spoil something.
I would never spoil anything. You know how I feel about spoilers.
I am on the very end of season 2 right now. And
good stuff,
the,
right?
The majority that I, but the interesting thing is a lot of people have told me, oh, if you like season one and two, you're going to love what happens next, because I thought that stuff was boring. I was like, that stuff's not boring. That was exciting.
Yeah, man. I like the stuff. It's a slow burn.
No, this is
good.
Great,
it's
but we cannot have this conversation when there are people in the audience that haven't heard the good word. Like,
well, I'm trying to make this spoiler free. I haven't said anything either about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you just said it's
yeah,
slow
I just said
moving.
That the first two seasons have been great. People have been telling me they haven't been so great. I think, like, I'm ready for seasons 3 and 4 just because, right, we're on 4 now?
Yeah. We're on 4, yeah.
Yeah.
3 is available.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. I know, I'm getting to
oh, okay.
I'm cool. Going to get to that. Problem is I have to watch these with my girlfriend.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
a problem.
That is, well, no, of course not a problem, but, you know, me, if I could watch on my own time, I'd be done.
Yeah.
All right? Like, I don't need sleep, okay? But teachers need sleep. We can agree on that.
True
Every
that.
Teacher should get a good night's sleep
That's
because
true. They have to talk to children.
They have to
all
talk
day.
To children all day. I have to talk to children all day. I put that in
guys. They're right
quotations.
Yeah,
but
why are they still
no,
here?
I'm not talking about those people.
Hardest working team in the world.
Oh my goodness, I'm not talking about those people. All right, we have to cut the post show short because I have to go talk to those people. Thank you for listening.
Good night.
Sweet. Fun. I thought it'd be fun.